All right, folks. Well, we are now on the next section, and this is the discussion about the Secular Therapy Project. And with me to talk about that is the co-director, Travis McKee Vorst. Travis, welcome, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So briefly, this is actually the first time that you and I are meeting. So why don't you just briefly tell me a little bit about like who you are and how you heard about RFR and stepped up into the co-director role.
Yeah. So let's see, who am I? I guess a lot of times, like what we refer to a lot of times is kind of what we do for work. That is a big piece of who I am. So I teach psychology at Dalton State College. It's a four-year college in Northwest Georgia. Note that that's in the Bible Belt. I think that'll come in to be important here. In a little while, I'm not from the Bible Belt. I moved, my first exposure to the Bible Belt really was moving to Arkansas to graduate school. Before that, I was in Minnesota, got my bachelor's degree in Minnesota in psychology, grew up in Germany, before that. And so my experience, yeah, I've kind of moved around obviously between continents and, then between states. And so moving to Arkansas, and kind of seeing how religion was much more integrated sort of in the assumptions of everyday life, sort of is what got me interested in the topic. My experience before was that it was always something very private, I guess, and Arkansas very much so in your face. We, I think, lived in the town that had the most churches per capita. Jonesboro, Arkansas. First time was living in a dry county. I didn't know that was something that existed. Obviously, you know, religious and church influence there.
Yeah.
And so I studied counseling in Arkansas. That was my specialist degree that I was working on there, and saw sort of the influence and people, how they struggled with separating their religious identities from the work that they were doing. And then when I pursued my PhD at University of Georgia, that was then the topic that I investigated, seeing that counselors in my area were advertising their religious affiliation, which was something that surprised me, because in my training, my experience, that wasn't something that you were even supposed to do. To me, that was an ethical violation. And so
You were seeing therapists in the Georgia area who were proudly saying, "Hey, I'm a Christian. Come and talk to me about your personal problems."
Yeah. So in their advert, like even in on like their signs that they would display outside, they'd have religious symbols, you know, openly displayed, like, you know, Jesus fish or something like that. And or if you read counseling profiles, you know, they would openly, you know, state that, you know, either that they are Christian or that they work with specifically with Christians, which, you know, limits access to therapy, which I think is a problem. And so, yeah, ultimately that was something then that I investigated in my PhD thesis, which was on the experience of atheists in receiving counseling in the Bible Belt. And so that was something that I studied. And through that process, actually, of just becoming more familiar with what are the resources out there, that's when I discovered Recovering from Religion.
Got it. And how long have you been in the co-director position?
Oh, you'd have to ask me that.
It's a trick question.
I've sort of changed roles over time. I guess before I was an assistant director, and then I think about, I guess it's been about a year now that I've been the co-director.
Got it. So let's talk about the Secular Therapy Project. It's shortened down to STP. And to me, I think of an oil can when I see STP.
That's Stone Temple Pilots. What?
Oh, Stone Temple Pilots as well. Yes, that's exactly right. I remember that from the 90s. Oh, fun times. So, but what is the whole purpose of Secular Therapy Project? Yeah. Why is it important, and what does it do?
Sure. I mean, it really addresses that issue, sort of that I identified and that I was researching before, you know, this idea that the reality is that there are a lot of therapists out there that either are unable or unwilling to separate their religious beliefs from the work that they do, which isn't what the profession is supposed to be doing. And so the Secular Therapy Project connects people who either have had an experience with that and really don't want to have that experience with, so we have people that really want to connect with a secular therapist and a therapist that's also evidence-based, you know, that isn't integrating sort of any kind of supernatural or unfounded beliefs into the work that they do.
So the Secular Therapy Project, does it actually provide the therapy itself?
That's a great question. We do have questions from, you know, potential clients sometimes that reach out to us and say, hey, you know, what are your rates, for example? Yeah. And the service only that we do, or the service that we do, is we connect potential clients with therapists. The therapists are not employed by the Secular Therapy Project. It is, it's a listing that has some additional screening that is done for it, but they're independent practitioners.
Oh, okay. So it's like a directory or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. And so myself, I'm not at all a trained mental health professional. What would it look like if I was first coming to Secular Therapy Project for the very first time? What would I need to do?
As a therapist?
As a client.
Yeah. Yeah. So as a client, you sign up for access to the service, because the listing isn't public. Privacy of the therapist is also protected. So you have to sign up to create a profile for yourself, and that allows you then to search for therapists within your area. So there's some geographic tags that you can say, hey, within 50 miles or 25 miles of my location within my state, or I'm looking for online therapy, those kind of things. And after you access that list, then you can send a message within the system to connect with that therapist and ask them any questions about rates, insurance, kind of things. Okay.
And are the therapists, do they always get back to you and like respond when you send them a message?
That's the idea. That's the hope and the design. Unfortunately, therapists can get busy as well. And we're actually currently working on a system to make sure that only the therapists that are actively responding are listed, just because sometimes we've had the experience that therapists have gotten busy. They you know, aren't getting back with folks. So therapists that aren't active any longer are going to be sort of deactivated until they become active again. So sometimes it can be frustrating, you know, when you're seeking help to, you know, to make sure that we get a response. And SDP leadership is definitely values that as well, that you know, therapists get back to clients in a, you know, reasonable manner, in a reasonable time frame. And so we're kind of tweaking the system to make sure that happens as fast as possible.
Got it. So it kind of is, the system itself is evolving, and it seems like it was almost built from scratch and purpose made for the Secular Therapy Project, the system itself.
It was. Absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, and I'm not the design person. I just say, I want this. And then we have a whole another team of volunteers that, that tries to make that happen.
Now we are a year and a half into the COVID pandemic. Mm-hmm. And, from what I understand, a lot of people have turned to seeking out therapy, and it has just booked the therapists that are out there, booked them solid. And a lot of therapists aren't taking on new clients because they simply don't have the time. Is that, I assume that is somewhat contributing to maybe some folks not responding, some therapists not responding to clients in the Secular Therapy Project?
Yeah, the therapists definitely are overwhelmed. I know in my own practice, you know, I'm pretty full. I think reaching out through the Secular Therapy Project is still a good idea to try mm-hmm. to find a therapist in that way. And I know for myself, even in my own practice, you know, if I have a client that's reaching out through the Secular Therapy Project, I try to, you know, make sure I make space for them. You know, this is something that, you know, I'm passionate about. And I will say that probably most therapists that are involved in the process are, you know, going to try to do everything that they can to, you know, prioritize and make sure that they have space if they at all possibly can, you know, for STP clients.
So it sounds like some advice to new clients or even clients who've been around for a while in the Secular Therapy Project website is to message more than one and don't get discouraged if you don't hear back. Does that sound pretty sound advice?
Yes, absolutely. And I'd say, you know, stick with it. We're working on that process of making sure that therapists that aren't responding to clients don't get eliminated, but they sort of go on in an inactive status until they log back into the website. So that's sort of our way to try to make sure that, you know, clients get the response in a timely manner. We're not quite there yet, but I would say again, with the next month or two, we should see some changes there.
When I first transitioned out of religion, I felt so alone. I felt scared that I was going to be outed, and that I would run the risk of losing friends or family or even livelihood. I can hear that connecting with one of these therapists, they would be pretty safe in some sense. But thinking back, just initially taking that step and sending an email or a message to one of these therapists would be really, really scary. Is my privacy kind of still secured at that point until I'm willing to connect to the therapist or commit to connect
with them? That's one of the big reasons on why we have it set up. You know, both the therapist's privacy is protected and the client's privacy are protected through the system. So that's why we have those sort of this internal messaging system that it's all contained within the website. So you reach out to the therapist at that point, you know, you can share, you know, your information, your identity with them if you choose, but the therapists are going to have their profiles that you'll be able to access as a client, and you'll see some information about them. But it's never going to be open to the public on who the clients are and or who our therapists are, unless, you know, you know, like myself, you know, I'm sort of a community figure, you know, and our faces are on the website kind of thing. But it's always sort of something that the therapist will choose on whether they share their identity. And so a lot of times you won't see that, you know, you won't see it publicly.
I understand why a client would be concerned connecting, but why is it important to keep the therapist's identity private?
So the therapists, you know, we're also living in part of a community, and some therapists are living in communities where their ability to recruit clients is going to be diminished if they are openly atheist or, you know, openly secular. And
lose their livelihood too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, you know, it can be scary, you know, when your practice is sort of on the line, you know, if I'm tagged sort of in my community as like, oh, that's where the atheists go, you know, people can't feel safe any longer going to that practice. So and some practices will advertise very openly, like, hey, you know, we are secular. But I would say as a whole, and to me, honestly, I mean, that's the thing, like secular therapy, really shouldn't be a thing almost, you know,
right.
It's by design. It's therapy is secular. You know, we don't go to a secular medical doctor. Now I would hope not, right? But you know, in reality, you know, we run into the same things in that community as well, you know. And
yeah,
I don't know how many dentists I've gone to that have, you know, Bibles in their waiting rooms. You know, so they're not immune, but you know, the profession in itself is not a religious profession. Mm-hmm. You know, whether we're talking about medicine or therapy or psychology, you know, these are secular professions really by nature. But it is something that in many communities still is assumed, you know, that it is, you know, Christianormative in that sense. So.
Got it. Well, so there seems to be three parts to this program. There's the clients like myself, there's the therapists like you, and then there's the volunteers behind the scenes that are kind of making things run. We talked about the clients briefly and kind of what their experience is. How can you tell me, or do you know, like right now we're recording this in the fall of 2021. Do you know how many clients or like, I don't know, client accounts there are in the Secular Therapy Project right now?
We have currently just under 25,000 clients.
25,000? Wow.
Yes. And there we're expanding, you know, primarily it's US based, but we've got folks from all over the world really that are, starting to see the value of our services and are trying to connect with, secular therapists.
So this is more than just in the United States that, this is available for folks worldwide.
Yeah. We're trying to increase access to, Spanish speaking countries. That's one of the things that the other co-director Tanya is working on, you know, and translating and those kind of things. We're expanding into Australia pretty heavily. We've got some folks over there that are working on, you know, sort of understanding the different licensing issues and that come with different countries. But yeah, we're really, I think, in several continents now, at least. I've had folks from Africa reach out, you know, different African countries, seeking therapists and, you know, trying to connect folks. So, you know, the problem exists worldwide. And so, you know, we're slowly trying to expand and try to help meet the needs of whoever needs it.
Yeah. Cause if I'm in Mexico or something and I log into my SCP account, there's as a client, there's going to have to be also therapists who are in the area too. And so it kind of gets two pieces. You have to not only let the clients know that this secular therapy product is available, but you also have to let the professionals know this as well.
Yeah.
Now, before we move on to the mental health professionals, as a client, and I'm in the Denver area, Colorado area, and if I search, say, I don't know, 50 miles within my my Denver area, I get a list of folks, and I'm able to contact all of those folks at the same time to reach out to them and see if they work.
You will look at a description of the therapist provides of themselves. Okay. So you can make some additional decisions on, you know, if that person might be a good fit for you. Then you can send five messages within a month to different therapists that you select from within the system. And then you will receive a message back from within that system, and you'll get notified, you know, on your personal email that, hey, a therapist responded to your message. There is a bit of a limitation that we had to put on the system, you know, because we have to pay per message that is sent out.
Oh, really?
And so, and that actually, we kind of had some problems with that for a little while, that was something I was being hijacked by, you know, hackers, you know, to send out other messages and those kind of things. But yeah, you can send up to five messages, to therapists, and hopefully that is a sufficient amount, you know, for you to find somebody. Yeah. Cause we do a good job of, vetting those therapists and make sure that, you know, they are folks that are, you know, fit our mission profile.
If I was a client and I come to secular therapy for the first time, what would it cost me to sign up? Is this like a monthly thing that I have to pay, or one time thing?
Sure. Well, the value that you're getting is amazing. For only three easy payments of $0. $0. Yeah, no, you to get onto the directory to find a therapist is free. It's free.
Wow.
We are looking at starting an application fee for therapists to help offset some of the costs. But yeah, for clients, it's a free service.
And right now, for the therapists, it's free to apply as well.
You know, I don't even want to say that it is, because we are so close to implementing the fee. So, hopefully within the next month or two, that'll be implemented. So until this point, it's been free. And you know, if you get onto it, you know, probably the next 20 minutes or so, you probably can still do a free application, but,
you're still doing the infomercial part. I love it. Now, here in the US, which I think is somewhat unique around the world, we have to purchase medical insurance from an insurance company, and that medical insurance may or may not provide for mental health on that end. Do all of your therapists take insurance? How does that work?
Yeah, because we are every therapist is independent. We don't have everybody that takes insurance. Okay. Again, that I think is another, I don't remember what the status is on it. We're working on having that something that is indicated in the profiles as well, so you can sort of sort that out before you reach out. In some directory listings, you know, the specific insurance that that I accept are listed. In my practice, I accept many, many different types of insurances, but a lot of therapists don't. And different plans work sort of in different ways. Some plans have out-of-network benefits where you can get reimbursed, others don't. So those are really important questions to ask a therapist in the beginning as well. And it's not even like a blanket question. It's not like, do you accept insurance or not? For every insurance company, we have to go through this paneling process. And so you might have a therapist that might accept, you know, Blue Cross and Anthem or something like that, but not Kaiser, as an example. So,
so complicated.
You know, it really is. Yes. And actually, that's one of the reasons why a lot of therapists says, you know, I'm not dealing with it, because it's, you know, all these different, you know, rates that get reimbursed, and it's a lot of work on the back end. And they're really quite frustrated with how insurance companies can, you know, dictate treatments. And that's sort of something that they've, you know, a lot of therapists have rejected. Unfortunately, you know, at the costs of affordability sometimes, you know, because, you know, it can be really expensive as well. And so we try to balance that. But we definitely have therapists that accept insurance, but don't assume that they do when you reach out.
And it's not a requirement to apply to the secondary project.
Correct. Yeah, that's not something that we investigate at all.
And I also understand that some therapists have like a sliding scale of rates depending on, I guess, income. Is that a common thing in the mental health field?
I don't know if it's, I mean, I guess common is difficult to describe, you know, but... there definitely are therapists that offer sliding fee scales out there. And I think that is something, you know, that in the getting to know you process is going to be something that you can, you know, discuss as well. And that's another one of those fair questions.
Working to find a therapist of my own, it wasn't a one and done thing. It took some time. I knew I needed to talk to somebody, and I had to put in a lot of work to find someone who I meshed with, who I'll be perfectly honest, I was raised I think by a sociopath, and I took some of his manipulative behaviors, and I could mess around with some therapists, and needed somebody who could call me on that stuff and straight, you know. And so it took it took going through several therapists before I found someone I was comfortable with. And yeah. So then
that's great.
What's that?
Sounds like you found somebody. That's awesome.
Yeah. But going into the process, I had no idea. I had no idea about that. I thought it would be just like walking into a doctor's office and they just give you shots. They give you recommendations and you're good to go.
Yeah.
But it's a little different.
Yeah. You have a close relationship with the therapist, but it's not like any other relationship that you have in your life. It's one way, it's a help, but it's still, very much a helping relationship, but it's important, to find that right person. And it can be a bit of a process sometimes. Actually, I've sort of had a little bit of a side project, that I've not worked on as much as I wanted to, but sort of a guide, do you ask a therapist, any therapist, but, I think that's very true for secular therapists as well. And I think we hit on some of those great points, like, hey, do you accept my insurance, do you integrate religion in your practice? With STP, we can, knock that one off. Do you use evidence-based practices? I think, if you're shopping for a therapist that's outside of the STP, those are going to be really, really important questions. Within the STP, those two questions, at least we don't have to worry about so much. But are you affirming of some of the other identities that I have? Do you have experience with that? Asking how many sessions might I, be working with you, what is your policy on those issues as well? So, STP just sort of took those really big questions. Are you evidence-based?
Yeah.
And are you secular? And we just kind of eliminated those, but there's still lots of questions to ask to make sure that you have the right fit therapists. Just because you found them on the STP website, you still may not, connect with them in the way that you really need to for your recovery. But we took a big chunk of work away from that process. And I feel really good about that.
Well, let's move on to that. Let's talk about the therapist. Let's say, I'm a mental health professional and I hear about secular therapy projects some way. What does that look like for me? What is the process, that I would have to go through in order to, be a part of this directly and connect with clients?
Yes. It's a lot harder for the therapist than for the client. For the client, you sign up, you don't have a vetting
process. Basically, you have to have an email.
Yeah,
and fog a mirror.
So the therapists also have to have an email. they have to be licensed. But the process of verification is something that is pretty stringent. So therapists submit a big, long questionnaire that, explains what their training was like, what their therapeutic approaches are, whether, that describes in what way that they can show that they are secular themselves. And we ask for evidence for that. The first step is they fill out a big, long profile. Then they have a team of therapists that then review those profiles and ask additional questions. And they're tough. They make sure we look at background, we check out websites, we look for evidence that they are in fact licensed for one, that they are secular, and that they are not using any kind of treatments that are not founded in evidence-based practice. And so that process can take a little while because, again, we're looking at volunteers, we're looking at people that, are doing this on their own time. And so it can take a month or two for therapists to, submit their profile, to have it reviewed. If we're unhappy with any of the responses, or if we're unclear with any of the responses, there might be some follow-up emails asking for clarifications on any systems. Or any aspects of their profiles. So that's a bit of a back and forth process. And not until, they've gone through that entire vetting process, do they eventually then, if they pass it, get approved. And applying is not a guarantee that you're going to get approved. We have lots of folks that can get disqualified, either that they're insufficiently secular, or that they're insufficiently evidence-based. So they're using methods that just don't have the stringent requirements that the secular therapy project has.
So out of about 100 applicants, let's say, how many would be included on average in this set of 100 applicants? So basically, what is the acceptance rate, I think, is the question.
Sure, sure. Yeah, it's a great question. And I'm not the vetting person.
Okay.
I vet therapists every now and then. So, to sort of help out on that front. So I'm really guessing here, but I would say probably about 30% is what gets through.
So three out of 10 mental health professionals, perhaps, somewhere in that area. Yeah,
that would be my guess.
Less than half.
Yes.
Wow. That's a pretty heavy vetting.
Yes, it is. And, we're at, 500, just under 540 therapists, mm-hmm. that we have vetted. It seems to be, growing fairly, very steadily. But our number of clients is increasing, our number of therapists are increasing. And it's a good amount, but we definitely need more. We definitely still have pockets in the country and, obviously the world, where we need more therapists.
Yeah. So these, mental health professionals, they're vetted to make sure that they have their licensing. Mm-hmm. They're vetted to make sure that they run a secular, practice. And I know that, my experience, I've spent money on therapists where I was kind of doubting, a pagan, like I was going through a paganism phase, mm-hmm. as I was transitioning out of religion, and I was mm-hmm. kind of talking to the therapist about how these paganism beliefs aren't making sense anymore. And, mm-hmm. He goes, yeah, you're absolutely right. And, but however, this Jesus guy who died and came to back to life and 3 days later, this makes much more sense. And I didn't go back to him after that. Yeah. That was three sessions that I lost, and I don't know how much money.
That is such a common experience. That especially with therapists that haven't been vetted, that the maybe they can even keep it in check, for three, four sessions. And then there seems to be a point sometimes when somebody's asked to, hey, let's pray together, or, let me recommend you to a church, those kind of messages. And, for somebody who's undergone or is undergoing that process of leaving religion, that can be incredibly damaging. And it's honestly quite infuriating to me as a therapist when I hear those stories that, time and effort and trust was given to a therapist.
Right.
And then that is taken away. And so that's why I think this is such an important work that we do at the SDP to make sure that doesn't happen.
So what type of practices, if you saw a therapist who was applying to the secular therapy project, what type of practices would not be acceptable at this point, or would raise some alarms? Like what type of practice will you not find in the secular therapy project?
Sure. I mean, as far as specific professions, we've got licensed clinical social workers. We have marriage and family therapists. We have psychologists, psychiatrists. As far as like the professional backgrounds, we're varied quite heavily.
Real quick, does that include like life coaches or
no, we don't have any life coaches. That is probably one of the areas that we have folks that may also be licensed as life coaches or may have some kind of a specialty as life coaches as well, but in general, we don't have anybody that just claims to be a life coach kind of thing. Yeah, we have some overlap with some therapists that also sort of do that kind of a work. Okay. But we don't have anybody that is accepted into the secular therapy project as a life coach. So you might see a few of those. Actually, probably if we see life coaching as sort of a thing that a therapist does at usually does raise some flags where we're going to, you know, really kind of hone in and kind of see, you know, how do they integrate that in their practice? Is this sufficiently separate? And, you know, yeah, we'll engage in that vetting process probably even more heavy when we see those kind of things. As far as other things that you won't see, folks that mention things like that they integrate the power of crystals or something like that into their practice, or you know, that do chakra works or those kind of new age sort of approaches. We go from a list of evidence-based practices that have been really shown to actually show improvement. So really, if it's not on that list, and it's a extensive list, and it depends on what the issue is going on that the therapist you know, is using an appropriate treatment methodology. The most common thing that you'll see is cognitive behavioral based treatments. You know, so that would probably be the most common approach that we approve.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, I've heard the initialism CBT thrown around for cognitive behavioral therapist.
Correct. Yep.
Therapy.
Exactly. So yeah, you'll see that, you know, if you see that in the profile, CBT, that stands for cognitive behavioral therapy. And that is one of the methods that's been the most extensively researched and shown to be effective for a lot of the common things that we see people for. You know, probably the most common things are depression, anxiety, you know, some trauma treatments, and those kind of things. But it really has a really wide founding approach. Now, we might see other different types of things depending, you know, if somebody's doing couples work or family work and those kind of things. But regardless of what they're treating, we just make sure that the treatment approach that they use is something that is shown to be effective.
So what about for folks who are maybe struggling as they're transitioning out of religion with their LGBTQ identity, or just any that kind of, even if they're not transitioning out of religion, they're still kind of struggling. Are there therapists who kind of specialize in working with LGBTQ folks, or are they friendly to that class of people?
Yeah, I would say as a community, the therapists on the SDP project are, you'll find that are very LGBT affirming in their practices. We definitely have folks that are more specialized in that, and I would take a look at their profiles again, you know, and you know, that if it's not something that's mentioned, don't assume that they're not LGBT affirming. So that might be something that you can, you know, include in your message that you send to them. You know, are you an LGBT affirming practice? But I feel really confident that the folks, the therapists that we have as a practice are going to be LGBT friendly and affirming.
A lot of times people who are also transitioning out of religion, they really have a poisonous or a poisoned view of their own, of sex in general. And I know that I struggle with that still, kind of the old Victorian view of sex, and it's taken a lot of work, but I'm still not fully there. Is sex therapy a thing? And if so, are there folks in the STP who can help us out with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sex therapy is a thing. And you, again, we'll find lots of therapists that are going to be sex positive. I would say as a community, you know, if we grab somebody from the STP community, therapists from the STP community, you're going to be way more likely than sort of the general therapy community to find somebody that is sex positive. And yeah, we also have, lots of folks, and actually the previous director was, specialized in sex therapy, as well. So yeah, we definitely have a large list. And again, take a look at the profiles, look for, you know, those things, if that's specifically something that you want to be working on. and ask questions, you know, reach out to the therapist. I think those are great questions to ask in that first email. You know, let them know kind of what you want to be working on. You know, what are the things that are important to you? And the therapist should be able to tell you that, you know, whether they're going to be a good fit or not.
And you also mentioned psychiatrists, and I think those are the folks who can diagnose mental illness and prescribe medication for that. Is that right?
Yeah. And yes, that is, they can diagnose mental illness, but lots of other practitioners can do that as well.
Okay.
There are some state specific differences. You know, so in some states, professional counselors are allowed to diagnose, in others, they are not. Psychiatrists across the board are going to be folks that can diagnose. They're medical doctors, and yeah, they are the ones that can prescribe the medications. We don't have a lot of psychiatrists, so that really isn't you know, a solid resource. If you're looking for a new psychiatrist, Secular Therapy Project is probably not the place to specifically find a psychiatrist. Psychiatrists can also provide therapy. Usually you're not going to get therapy from a psychiatrist.
Got it. Okay.
So, you know, a psychiatrist that reaches out, you know, and shows us that they're engaging in evidence-based practices when it comes to their therapy work, they can absolutely be approved. I think we might have one or two psychiatrists in our system, but it's not something that we specialize in.
Got it. Well, we've talked about the clients. We've talked about the mental health professional, the therapists. What about the volunteers? About how many volunteers do you think work behind the scenes with Secular Therapy Project, including yourself?
Man, that is a great question. Because there's so many components to it, you know, sort of on the head, we've got, you know, the head of our vetting team, Danny Boylan. We got, you know, Tanya that, you know, is a co-director with myself. We're probably the most, visible volunteers, but then we got so many volunteers that, especially behind the scenes working on the website, you know, that is really the meat and potatoes, I guess, of the work that we do is the website, because that's where people come in to apply. That's where people come to connect. And I would say that most of the volunteer work is probably within the website. If I had to put a number on it, gosh, I'm probably going to grossly underestimate it, because sometimes there's just these little roles, you know, that we cross over with, you know, the volunteers from Recovering from Religion Project. We've got volunteers that specialize now in Secular Therapy Project on the technical side, but, you know, we're all working together, you know, so I don't know, 15 folks, okay. Maybe.
Right.
be my guess, but you know, kind of just making stuff up.
It sounds like there is some more opportunity. There's an opportunity for more volunteers to pitch in if they're passionate about this program.
Yeah, absolutely. I think on the technical side is probably the greatest need and opportunity. We've got a vetting team, you know, that is, you know, all, I believe they're all therapists that are engaged in that process, you know, and we can always use help there. You know, and we'll post positions, you know, as they come up. We've sort of talked about, you know, having folks that can help us with, you know, some of the organizational things, and we'll post that on the Slack community if we have those positions available as well.
Perfect. You're a volunteer, just like myself. We kind of are doing this out of the passion for it for the most part, but what has volunteering been like for you, and why do you keep doing it?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think the RFR philosophy around volunteering is really good. They've been so receptive to any work that I want to do and that I'm able to do, but also being okay with sort of saying like, you know, I can't do that right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they're an organization that really cares about its volunteers and doesn't just play lip service to that. You know, I think you hear that all the time. We care about our people kind of thing. Yeah. But you know, I think with RFR SDP, like that is a value that's really lived. You know, they'll reach out to you and ask you to contribute, but also be really understanding when life happens, you know. And you know, for the past year and a half, boy, we've had a lot of life happen, you know, and a lot of loss and grief and difficult times as well. And you know, as an organization, they're there to, you know, I always feel supported, you know, for myself and kind of what I need. You know, you get something out of it. You know, it kind of, like I mentioned, you know, the STP therapists, you know, we're passionate about this work. You know, we see the deficit that exists in the community, and we're people that want to help. You know, I mean, therapists are helpers sort of by nature, I think. And you know, this just provides a great outlet for that work.
Well, Travis, thank you so much for sitting down and talking with me about this. I've learned a lot coming out, and I really, really appreciate your knowledge and your experience in this. Thank you so, so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, folks. Well, this is wrapping up the secular therapy portion of the video, and moving on, we've got some more stuff to talk about. We'll see you in the next section.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts, or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.